The material that I'm going to be using this morning is from Ken Sandy, his Peacemaker Ministries. You can access it online. Just Google Peacemaker Ministries, Ken Sandy, and many of these principles that I'm going to be sharing with you are on there. How many of us experience conflicts? We all experience conflicts. Conflicts are very, very difficult. But I'm going to show something to you just to provide some happiness for you. Babies, they are so cute and adorable. Their happy smiles and carefree expressions are charming and captivating. Just think, you used to be like that. They are so sweet and precious until they don't get what they want. And they throw temper tantrums and they dramatically mutate into an uncontrollable, terrifying creature. Aren't you glad that you've grown out of that stage? Yes, now we no longer throw fits and tantrums when things don't go our way, right? If only we daily face conflicts that bring us to face the best and the worst in us. How do we face conflict? How do we face conflict, especially as Christians? How do we face and resolve conflict God's way? That's what I'd like to discuss with you this morning. First of all, what is conflict? Conflict is a serious difference in opinion or purpose that frustrates someone's goals, desires, and expectations. And as I mentioned, we experience conflicts how often? Daily. One of my churches, we had a very, very successful quilting ministry where three ladies created these beautiful quilts with Bible passages on, and they would give them to new mothers that are in the church but also in the community. One day, a member came and wanted to join this ministry, but she was declined by the three. She was offended, enraged, attacked the ladies, and they scorned and dismissed her. Members unsuccessfully tried to resolve this conflict. The elders tried to resolve this conflict. The church board tried to resolve this conflict. The conference tried to resolve this conflict with no success. And eventually, the church became so polarized that it split over a quilting ministry. What is the cause of conflict? James says in chapter 4, verse 1 and 2, he says, "What is causing the quarrels and fights among you? Don't they come from the evil desires at war within you? You want what you don't have, so you scheme and kill to get it. You are jealous of what others have, but you can't get it. So you fight and wage war to take it away from them." Unchecked, sinful, selfish attitudes and desires lead to conflict all the time. And they then surface in differences in values and goals, in misunderstandings that we may have, when there's competition for power and position that we experience at work, or even sometimes with peers at home, or stress caused by change. The selfish human heart surfaces and causes disturbances and quarrels. And unresolved conflicts eventually lead to bitterness, hostility, and estrangement. Just like we experience every day in our toxic world, what we see on TV, and unfortunately, encounter where? At work, at home, and even at the church. This morning, I'm going to look at four principles of resolving conflict God's way. Principle number one, first G, is to glorify God. Second one is get the log out of your eye. Third one is to gently restore. And the fourth one, go and be reconciled. So let's look at the first one, to glorify God. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19 and 20 states, or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, who is in you, whom you have from God, and that you are what? You are not your own. For you were bought at a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. Who do we belong to according to this passage? We belong to God. He redeemed us, paid a costly price through His beloved Son. We are His temple, and He longs to dwell within us through His temple that He might reveal His glory in and through us. And the evidence of His presence within us is what? What should be evident? It's the fruits of the Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. We, as Christ's temple, reveal His glory by bearing fruit, resulting in love and unity that proves to the world that Christ is living within us, that we are His sole temple. In the book, This Day with God, we read, our unity and love for one another are the credentials by which we testify to the world that God has sent His Son to save whom? To save sinners, which is whom? To save us. But Satan well knows that the strength of the church is in its unity, and he employs all his power and resources to sabotage this. We read here in Second Selected Messages, it says, unity is the strength of the church. Satan knows this, and he employs his whole force to bring in what? Dissension. He desires to see a lack of harmony among the members of the church of God. He desires to see that. And does he provoke that? Yes, often. And how does he create this dissension leading to conflict? He knows each one of us that by birth we belong to whom? By birth you belong to him. He is the prince of this world, the evil power that controls sinful humanity. He rules and manipulates us through our selfish, sinful natures and triggers our self-life, the cravings of our self-life, our sinful nature, as expressed in Galatians 5 also. And I'm going to read from the Passion Translation, which really illustrates what happens with the flesh when Satan can exploit our flesh. The cravings of the self-flesh, of the self-life, are obvious. Manipulating others, hatred of those who get in your way, senseless arguments, resentment when others are favored, temper tantrums, angry quarrels, only thinking of yourself, being loved with your own opinions, being envious of the blessings of others. Satan targets and triggers these within us, and yielded to him, he does manipulate us so that we then manipulate others. We hate those who get in our way. We engage in senseless arguments, resent those who are favored more than us, employ temper tantrums, angry quarrels to get our way. We become selfishly fixated on ourselves and our own opinions and being envious of what others have. As a result, relational integrity is compromised. Relational integrity, harmony, is compromised, our homes and churches suffer, and our witness for Christ and His glory is what? Crippled. What master are we choosing? You know, Jesus said in Matthew 6, verse 24, He says, no man can serve what? Two masters, for either he will hate the one or love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. The question is, are we choosing Christ to selflessly live for His glory? This will be evident in the fruits of the Spirit, resulting in love and unity, relational integrity, and harmony. Or are we choosing Satan to selfishly glorify Him, thus silencing Christ's witness in the home and the church, which is evidenced by the fruit of the flesh, the cravings of our self-life, expressed in quarrels and conflicts, resulting in broken and estranged relationships. There is a much, much bigger conflict that we really are engaged in. And it is only by choosing Christ and walking in the Spirit that we are free from Satan's evil control and are able to live for Christ's glory. That's why in Galatians 5, once again, verse 16 and 17, very important, the Apostle Paul says, so I say, walk by whom? The Spirit. Walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the flesh desires what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit that is contrary to the flesh. They are in conflict with each other, so that you are not to do whatever you want to do. Walk according to the Spirit, because you belong to Christ. He redeemed you. You are His soul temple, and He dwells within you through His Spirit. So, resolving conflict God's way. First one, principle, is to glorify God. That's what we've been called to do. Principle number two, get the log out of your eye. When you read Matthew 7, verses 1 through 5, and this is from the New Living Translation, Jesus, speaking to the disciples, says, do not judge others, and you will not be judged. For you will be treated as you treat others. The standards you use in judging is the standard by which you will be judged. And why worry about a speck in your friend's eye when you have a what in your own eye? A log in your own eye. How can you think of saying to your friend, let me help you get rid of that speck in your eye, when you can't see the past log in your own eye? Hypocrite, first get rid of the log in your own eye, then you will see well enough to deal with the speck in your own friend's eye. So, what are the logs that we have in our own eye? Well, Paul was talking about the first log that affects all others. It's our sinful nature. It's the flesh. When we are controlled by the flesh, that then manifests itself through a critical, negative, or overly sensitive attitude, or a self-righteous spirit where we compare ourselves with others and think that we are better than others, or if we're holding on to secret sins. Because when you hold on to secret sins, what do you notice in others? That they have the same thing that you are struggling with, and because you are critical of yourself, you tend to be critical of them. When resolving conflict, we need to ask the Spirit of God to search our hearts and expose the logs that are in our own eyes. As Psalms 139, David says, search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there be any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. You know, if we look at the Apostle Paul, he once viewed Christ through his self-righteous, Judaical lens. He was critical of and offended by Christ because Christ's selfless words and life exposed his selfishness, and as a result, he attempted to silence Christ in his witness through other believers. But things changed for the Apostle Paul when he encountered Christ on the Damascus Road. When his sin was exposed, he saw his selfishness, but Jesus revealed to him his love to forgive, to restore, and to transform. His critical self-righteous log was replaced by Christ's compassionate eyes and mind. That the Apostle Paul was now compelled by the love of God, and he looked at people different. That's why when we look at 2 Corinthians 5, verse 14 and 17, here the Apostle Paul is expressing his experience. He says, "For the love of Christ compels us, because we are convinced that one died for all, therefore who has died? We all have died. And he died for all, that those who live should no longer live for who? For themselves, but for him who died for them and who was raised again. So then, from now on," this is the Apostle Paul saying, "from now on, we regard and look at no one from a worldly point of view with a log in our own eyes. Though we once regarded Christ in this way, we do so no longer." The Apostle Paul looked at people completely different after the Damascus Road experience. He was beholding people through the eyes and mind of Christ, longing to compassionately restore others to Christ. Resolving conflict God's way. First G, glorify God. Second G, get the log out of your eye. And then the third G, gently restore. Want us to look at a familiar passage that we always quote when we're dealing with what? Conflicts, quarrels, and fights. Matthew 18, verse 15 says, "Moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. And if he hears you, you have gained your brother." Now, I want to read it from the Passion Translation as well. It says, "If your fellow believer sins against you, you must go to that one privately and attempt to resolve the matter. And if he responds, your relationship is restored." Now, we see the value of privately going to our brother to resolve issues, right? We don't talk about them to others, right? You all agree? We all practice that, right? If only. But often, we are selfishly motivated when we go talk to a brother to correct them instead of restoring them. Because they hurt us, and we unconsciously want payback. Very important that we understand the context to this passage. Let's look at verses 12 through 14. Jesus here speaking, he says, "What do you think? If a man has 100 sheep and one of them goes astray, does he not leave the 99 and go to the mountains to seek the one that is straying? And if he should find it, assuredly, I say to you, he rejoices more over that sheep than over the 99 that did not go astray. Even so, it is not the will of your Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish." When someone hurts, offends, or injures us, is it possible that it may have been done unintentional? Is it possible? Yes, it is possible. But what if it isn't? What if their intent was hostile and malicious? What is that indicative of? It's probably indicating that they are operating from a good spirit or a bad spirit. From a bad spirit, proving that they themselves are damaged and broken from sin. They aren't the enemy. Who is? Satan is the enemy. They are collateral damage, victimized by sin and Satan. They are enslaved and quite possibly lost. Might they be one of the 99 sheep that are lost? Could it possibly be that they might be the one that is lost? Might we need the good shepherd's heart in gently restoring them, not confronting them with the list of wrongs whereby they hurt or injured us? You know, I like what Ken Sandy says. Peacemaker Ministries, he said, Jesus is clearly calling for something much more loving and redemptive than simply confronting others with a list of what? Of their wrongs. This is why the Apostle Paul counsels us with the following words in Galatians 6, verses 1 and 2. And I'm reading from the New Living Translation. Dear brothers and sisters, if another believer is overcome by some sin, you who are what? Spiritual or godly, should gently and humbly help that person back onto the right path. And be careful not to fall into the same temptation yourself. Share each other's burdens, and in this way, you will obey what? The law of Christ. We need to pray for the gift of humility, that we might see others through the eyes and mind of Christ, recognizing they, like us, are Christ-purchased property. That's why I like Testimonies to the Church, Volume 7. It says, human beings are Christ's property, purchased by Him at an infinite price, bound to Him by the love that He and His Father have manifested for them. How careful, then, we should be in dealing with whom? With one another. How careful should we be in dealing with one another? I shared this story previous, you might remember, but a student at an academy where was a chaplain, he struggled with a disrespectful attitude. He was a good student, hard worker, and very cooperative until confronted with an offense when he did something wrong. He would strongly react in anger and defiance. And finally, the administration had enough and they wanted to expel him. I asked for time that I might work with him and help him. And after visiting him and listening to him, I discovered he was a victim of sexual abuse at the hands of his youth pastor, whom he trusted. He struggled with trusting authority, notably in confrontive circumstances. He found healing and remained at the school as I shared Jesus Christ with him. He experienced tremendous healing and he was able to continue there at the school. Remember, human beings are whose property? They are Christ's property, purchased by Him at the price, at an infinite price, bound to Him by the love that He and His Father have manifested for them. How careful, then, should we be in dealing with whom? With one another. How careful we should be in dealing with one another. Resolving conflict God's way. We looked at the first G, glorify God. The second G, get the log out of your eye. The third G, gently restore. And the fourth G is go and be reconciled. Ken Sandy, I like his words here. He says, one of the most unique features of biblical peacemaking is the pursuit of genuine forgiveness and reconciliation. Even though Christians have experienced the greatest forgiveness in the world, we often fail to show that forgiveness to others. Is that true? Is that true? To cover up our disobedience, we often use the shallow statement, I forgive her, I just don't want to have anything to do with her again. Just think, however, how would you feel if God said to you, I forgive you, I just don't want to have anything to do with you again. You know, this is what we find the Apostle Paul saying in Colossians 3, verses 12 and 13. He's saying to us, therefore, as God's chosen people, who's he speaking to? Us. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with what? Compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as what? As the Lord forgave you. Forgiveness is a decision that involves four promises. Do you want to hear what they are? four promises. I will not dwell on this incident. I will not bring this incident up and use it against you. I will not talk to others about this incident, and I will not allow this incident to stand between us or hinder what? Not hinder our personal relationship. Forgiveness is refusing sinful attitudes and expectations and not expecting the offender to earn or deserve our forgiveness, desiring to punish the offender, or demanding a guarantee that it won't occur again. From the book Gospel Work, as we read, deal with your brother as you wish God to deal with whom? God to deal with whom? With you. If we expect our prayers for forgiveness to be heard, we must offer them a forgiving spirit. We must forgive others in the same manner and to the same extent that we ourselves hope to be what? To be forgiven. If we don't do that, listen to what Huggett says. He says, forgiveness withheld turns into resentment and bitterness. Emotions are invisible but destructive as dry rot that causes whole buildings to crumble. Have any of you ever struggled with bitterness? What has it done to you? Has it helped you in hurting the person who violated you? Or who has it hurt? It really hurts yourself. You know, I guess we have time for this. Mayo Clinic. I want to share. Those of you who struggle with offering forgiveness to others, Mayo Clinic offers some suggestions. Number one, practice empathy. Identify with the other person's point of view. Next one, discover why he or she would behave in such a manner. Perhaps you would have reacted similarly if you faced the same situation. Number three, reflect on times you've hurt others and on those who've forgiven you. Talk with the person you found to be wise and compassionate, such as a spiritual leader or an impartial loved one or friend. And fifth one, be aware that forgiveness is a process, and even small hurts may need to be revisited and forgiven. How often? Over and over again. I love the story of Joseph. Gail loves it too. Joseph. Unfortunately, he was spoiled. By whom? He was spoiled by his dad. He was favored, spoiled by his dad, given a special coat. And the brothers looking on were angry and bitter. And that bitterness consumed them. That what did they do to Joseph? They sold him to a band of Ishmaelite traders. And he was taken to Egypt, where he faced much injustice. But what did this injustice do for Joseph? His character was refined. He became a new man that God then entrusted this new Joseph to be what? Prime minister in Egypt. And years later, who comes to the prime minister of Egypt asking for help? Who does? His brothers. Joseph sees his brothers there, and when he saw them, he was angry and bitter. Was he? No. When he saw them there, he said the following things to them. He said, "Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended harm to me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then, don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children." And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them. Joseph forgave them because he entrusted himself to his God. He yielded himself to his God that he was enabled to forgive them. Are you wounded and weary, struggling with an unforgiving spirit this morning? Are you challenged with unresolved conflicts that burden you? Join me in the closing hymn and invite, as you sing the words and meditate on the thoughts, invite Christ as the good shepherd and potter to skillfully mold and shape you into his image, allowing him to replace distrust and suspicion with faith and confidence, selfishness with selflessness, his selflessness, and bitterness with humility and forgiveness, enabling you to resolve conflicts his way.